Michaela, I think I don't have a question to you, but
I have nothing to say.
Milja.
Milja. Danke.
Maybe I tell out another track.
Tell us a story.
Tell us a story. Good story.
Yeah, one second.
We want to have good stories.
I want the whole world to be bright.
Yeah.
And happy.
Das kommt nach Geburtstag.
I have a lover, a lover like no other. She got so sweet soul, and she teach me how to sing. Shows me colors when there's none to see. Gives me hope when I can't believe that for the first time I feel loved. I have a brother when I'm a brother in need. I spend my whole time running, he spends his running after me. When I feel myself going down, I just call and he comes around. But for the first time I feel love. A rich man, he wears a rich man's cloak. He gave me the keys to his kingdom coming, gave me a cup of gold. He said, I have many mansions, and there are many rooms to see. But I left by the back door, and I threw away the key. And I threw away the key.
So this is now your show. It's kind of a different.
Yeah, it's totally different because I wanted to ask something about performativity, and I will read something, and it's about a performance. In a performance by Marina Abramović, actions are according then to Fischer Lichte. That's another author who was writing about performativity. That's your telephone. Are performed by the artist as well as the viewers. Actions, qua actions, constitute for all involved in the performance a new reality in its own right. Now, this reality was not only interpreted by the viewers, but primarily experienced in its consequences. It elicited in the viewers astonishment, shock, horror, disgust, nausea, dizziness, fascination, curiosity, compassion, anguish, and compels them to perform their own reality-constituting acts. It can be shown on the basis of artistic conceptions that art as a work is no longer merely the result of reflection. Instead, it becomes an action, an aesthetic practice. Dieter Mersch develops this view in an archaeology of the performative. On the example of artistic concepts, one can show that art as a work is no longer only the result of reflections. Razor. This is repeating. Now I understand. The creative act itself, as it suddenly emerged from processes of intermedia performance, is an assertion of artistic action. And concepts begin to supplant the mere image, and this must be understood as an act of liberation. What I want to know is the performative dimension of art does not address the signifying character of the work of art. Its factual existence here comes to the fore as significant as a point of departure for a potential of artistic action and assertion. The social aspect of ambitious art, thus Dorothea Handelmann says, is manifest in art with a performative orientation that has turned towards social critique. Artistic positions such as Coleman's, Behrens, Segal's, and Kuhn's abdicate, thus Handelmann, the critical distance from society in favor of a consciousness of participation. Have you ever think about performativity and what art is, or is what is more important, the artwork or what, or the artistic action for you?
I think the most important thing is that you just actually do something. I think first of all, what sets the movement or
that's right, keep an a action, positive frame of mind,
because without an action or a movement or someone doing something, there is no much to discuss or I think or to talk about in the end. So I think it's I'm not sure if many people think about how it goes or how it continues or something. I think it's just by the initiative of initiating an idea of starting something. I think that's very important, I think. Well, then about performativity, or when then you could start classifying it maybe later on when it's somehow more than just a fragment or like an idea still or something, because a lot of things just end up being just ideas also, right, for anyone working on anything. But the moment you realize the ideas, then it's also when it becomes actually like a, something else. So.
Yeah. But this is always this kind of aesthetic of the performative or performativity. It's always related to the work of art. It's not really related to what artists are doing.
Well, who really cares what artists are doing?
Yeah. Why?
Because they eat breakfast and talk on the phone. Probably a bunch of them watch TV. I mean, you do that too.
What? Watching TV?
Stop reading books.
Yeah. Okay. But an artwork cannot be not performative, because when I say something and if you are saying something in the radio, it's always a performative speech act, for example, because you are doing radio in the moment when you are speaking, And when, but where's the difference? Have you ever rethink about the difference between language and art?
Sure.
It's not something I think about when I wake up in the morning, if I say so.
Yeah. Okay.
But
maybe it's a last question. Do you think if you are doing something or if you have a new idea for a work, how do you deliberate about it? When something is coming up, where
some
you
people
see it's a creative part, or is it always being creative, which is very strange?
Some people, well, being creative, big idea, but I do know. I forgot the question. What was the question?
When you are, how do you deliberate about your own?
Yeah, some people use intuition.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Some people use a good shower to just make it keep on rolling. It doesn't have to be so complicated. Always, also, I think that in the end, I think people are quite. When it comes down to the fact, I think people are quite easier than they think they are also sometimes. This thing about someone tells you like, oh, I don't understand you, like, I cannot understand your behavior and so on, because they think it's like, but in the end it's like, is it that much to understand? Also, like, you meet a person and whatever you get out of that person is kind of also maybe what him or he is or she is, maybe like a person, it consists of what you are yourself, and then also how you actually act in relation to other people. As long as you're silent and on your own, you like something with yourself. But then when you, Michael, like, or Michaela, you're like acting against, that's also you, like, as much as you were you when you were thinking or writing or doing something else on your own, I think, or you also think. But I don't know if it makes sense, but that's what I thought about it.
I don't know very much about your works. What
I can tell one thing, this... one performance. Would you mind if I...
Oh, yeah, actually, that was your last year.
Would you mind... I mean, when you talk about something that's quite normal, this one piece by Miliena...
Milia
jumps to mind. It was performed in a small town in Ireland, and the simplicity of it was the kind of dynamite inside of it. There was no dynamite, this is a figure of speech, but the performance consisted of taking over appropriating a small shopfront space next to a hair salon, and the artist gathered some hair from the hair salon, spread it along the carpeted floor in the adjoining space, and there were people, an audience watching from outside the window but also inside the space, and quite silently, without very much song and dance, no song and dance, the artist swept up the hair from the carpet that had been scattered all over, and returned the room back to a fairly normal condition. There was still some hair on the ground, but that's beside the point. One person I heard in the audience said she was a mother, I suppose, and a housewife, perhaps, because she said, "Oh, great, does that mean I'm an artist?" Which was a great moment, I thought, and the confusion that the piece created was very effective, I thought. So in to support what Milena is saying about this kind of normal
act and kind of just confronting it as a normal act. This is one good example, I thought.
Mm. Yeah, that's right. But you would still consider that this is an artwork, this kind of performance?
Yeah.
Or can it happen everywhere?
It happens everywhere, but it depends. I would rather not explain like my whole thing. But I think that all of this thing you do every day, things that people do, I think should also be a bit elevated, I think, or praised. Also the way that someone is, the way someone is making a composition on the table as they're eating breakfast with all the groceries and things. So I think this is really, mm-hmm. it's really charming sometimes, and I think it's making that act into, putting into an artistic context, I think it's just really.
Okay, then.
Interesting. Yeah, no, but I'm seriously.
Okay, I wanted to question if art really matters. Does art matter? Can I say something like this? Art that matters? Is it art that matters, or is it art that matters, or is
does art matters? Does, yeah, sure.
Art matters,
you could say that. Like,
sure, it does matter.
And with a question mark.
I'm good. Can while you read it, can I snap in the background?
No, you can read it, maybe.
No, you.
Okay, discourses about art and artistic procedures are not characterized by communicative activities that discursively engender discursive objects or that would aim to produce agreement on a public version of the world. In order to understand what art is, aesthetics are developed that resemble each other in that they examine art as their object. It seems as though a conversation has in the meantime begun between artists and their interpreters, because artistic works have become interactive and performative. Yet, is this conversation truly taking place? Are discourses about art being developed in collaboration with the artists? Or is aesthetics in the end still nothing but the regime serving the identification of art, as Rancière calls it, so that art can be designated as art when it has spoken out as socially relevant art? Art matters? Do you see, is that for you a conflict maybe? Or
no, I think a good art should always be interactive with it. It does always involve the viewer in some way. Otherwise, I mean, you wouldn't be standing and looking at whatever it is you're taking part of. I think it somehow it making you feel like you can take part of it. How ununderstandable it is and how abstract it is to look at, you still feel like while you're looking at. That's what I like actually about seeing. I mean, if you take to see seeing different examples, but I think it, the one thing doesn't have to exclude the other one.
Yeah. Maybe I have to make this more precise. So let's play some music.
Stop. We'll be right back.
Okay.
Goodbye.
Goodbye from Milena and Mikhailo.
Yeah,
bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Ja, das war jetzt von April Gertler, das Airmail-Projekt, ein CD-Projekt, das sie jeweils an 100 Leute schickt, die ihr Stücke schicken und sie samplet das dann zu einer CD. Da spiele ich jetzt noch ein Stück.
Just a perfect day. Drink sangria in the park. And then later, when it gets dark, we go home. Just a perfect day. Feed animals in the zoo. Then later, a movie too, and then home. Oh, it's such a perfect day. I'm glad I spent it with you. Oh, such a perfect day. A perfect day. Problems all left alone. Weekenders on our own. It's such fun. just a perfect day. You made me forget myself. I thought I was someone else, someone good. Oh, it's such a perfect day.
So before I will come to the next track, some examples from Howard Becker as a sociologist of art. And he wrote a book, it's called Art Worlds. And he's considering about institutional theory of aesthetics, and he's giving an example. Ironically enough, a number of philosophers have produced a theory that, if it is not sociological, is sufficiently based on sociological considerations to let us see what such a theory might look like. This institutional theory of aesthetics, as it has come to be called, can serve as an example of the process just analyzed, the development of a new aesthetic, to take account of work the art world has already accepted. Perhaps equally ironically, a more sociology conception of an art world than that theory contains provides solutions to some of its problems, and I have detoured from the main line of my argument long enough to suggest those solutions. The preceding analysis suggests that new theories, rivaling, extending, or amending previous ones, arise when older theories fail to give an adequate account of the virtues of work, widely accepted by knowledgeable members of the relevant art world. When an existing aesthetics does not legitimate logically what is already legitimate in other ways, someone will construct a theory that does. What I say here should be understood as pseudo-history, indicating in a narrative form some relationships which may or may not have arisen exactly as I say they did. Thus, putting it crudely, for a long time works of visual art could be judged on the basis of an intimative theory according to which the object of visual art was to imitate nature. At some point, that theory no longer explained well-regarded new works of art. Monet's haystacks and cathedrals, for instance, even when rationalized as experiments in capturing the relationship between light and color, an expressive theory of art then found the virtues of works in their ability to communicate and express the emotions, ideas, and personalities of the artist who made them. That theory in turn had to be repaired or replaced so that it could deal with geometric abstraction, action painting, and other works that did not make sense in its terms. Similarly, neither these series nor their analogous would be able to say anything useful about aleatory music. The institutional theory aims to solve the problems raised by works that outrage both common sense and finer sensibilities by showing no trace of the artist at all, either in skill or intention. Institutional theorists concern themselves with works like the urinal or the snow shovel exhibited by Marcel Duchamp, whose only claim to being art apparently lay in Duchamp's signature on them, or the Brillo boxes exhibited by Andy Warhol. The common sense critique of these works is that anyone could have done them, that they require no skill or insight, that they do not imitate anything in nature because they are nature, that do not express anything interesting because they are no more than commonplace objects. The critique of those with finer sensibilities is much the same. Sardento and George Dickey have presented the most important statements of the institutional theory. Danto dealt with the essence of art, which was what in the relation between object and art would. Okay, again. Danto dealt with the essence of art, with what in the relation between object and art world made that object art. In a famous statement of the problem, he said, "To see something as art requires something the eye cannot describe, an atmosphere of artistic theory, a knowledge of the history of art, an art world. The theory out of which the idea of making the Brillo box came, the relation of that idea to other ideas about what makes artworks art and to the other objects those works inspired, all of these make a context in which the making of the Brillo box and the box itself become art, because that context gives them that sort of meaning. In another version, the moment something is considered an artwork, it becomes subject to an interpretation. It owes its existence as an artwork to this. And when its claim to art is defeated, it loses its interpretation and becomes a mere thing. The interpretation it is in some measure a function of the artistic context of the work. It means something different depending on its art historical location, its antecedents and the like. As an artwork, finally, it acquires a structure which an object photographically similar to it is simply disqualified from sustaining if it is a real thing. Art exists in an atmosphere of interpretation, and an artwork is thus a vehicle of interpretation. Philosophers tend to argue from hypothetical examples, and the art world Dickey and Dante refer to does not have much meat on its bones. Only what is minimally necessary to make the points they want to make. Nor do the criticism made of their positions often refer to the character of existing art worlds or ones which have existed, emphasizing instead logical inconsistencies in the constructs used in the theory. None of the participants in these discussions develops as organizationally complicated a conception of what an art world is, as does this book also. My description is not incompatible with their arguments. If we use a more complicated and empirically based notion of an art world, however, we can make headway on some problems in which the philosophical discussion has bogged down, thus perhaps being helpful to aestheticians and simultaneously deepening the analysis of the role of aesthetics in an art world.
About the glory of your legendary land. Get up, slumber musicians, finally. There is one song in every land that has its special band. Dreamland feeling says much more than a score. Play your dreamlike song, for it has just begun. Play it forward, play it back. Just don't stop before some rosy dawn decides to rise and turn itself into the morning sun.
Makes you pure and wise.
Yeah. After this consideration about what is a philosophical discussion about art worlds, Howard Becker is asking who can confer on something the status of candidate for appreciation and thus ratify it as art? Who can act on behalf of that social institution, the art world? Dickey settles this question boldly. He describes the art world as having core personnel who can act on its behalf. A loosely organized but nevertheless related set of persons, including artists, producers, museum directors, museum goers, theater goers, reporters or newspapers, critics for publication of all sorts, art historians, art theorists, philosophers of art, and others. These are the people who keep the machinery of the art world working and thereby provide for its continuing existence. But he also insists that, in addition, every person who sees himself as a member of the art world is thereby a member. And the last sentence, that last sentence, Howard Becker says, of course, warns aestheticization that Dickey's approach will probably not help them distinguish the deserving from the undeserving. This definition is going to be too broad. They cannot accept the implications of Dickey's remark that the representatives of the art world who will be conferring the honorific status of an art on objects are self-appointed and express their discontent in a rash of humorous examples. What if a zookeeper decides that he is a member of the art world and in that capacity confers the status of candidate for appreciation and thus of artwork on the elephant he tends? That couldn't really make the elephant a work of art, could it? Because after all, the zookeeper really couldn't act on behalf of the art world, could he? We all know the answers. The elephant just isn't an artwork. But how do we know that? We know it because we have a common sense understanding of the organization of art worlds. A relevant feature of organized art worlds is that, however, their position is justified. Some people are commonly seen by many of or most interested parties as more entitled to speak on behalf of the art world than others. The entitlement stems from their being recognized by the other participants in the corporate activities through which that art world's works are produced and consumed as the people entitled to do that. Whether other art world members accept them as capable of deciding what art is because they have more experience, because they have an innate gift for recognizing art, or simply because they are, after all, the people in charge of such things and therefore ought to know, whatever the reason. What lets them make the distinction and make it stick is that the other participants agree that they should be allowed to do it. Okay, another track.
Es el viento que me manda, que me empuja a la frontera y que borra el camino que detrás de esa frontera. rastro bajo el cielo y las nubes del invierno. Es el viento que las manda. No hay nadie que las pare. A veces combate despiadado, a veces baile, a veces nada. A veces baile, a veces
but
how many
art worlds are there?
Bajo el cielo de acero, soy el punto negro que anda a las orillas de la suerte.
Also, Howard Beckers Art Worlds, das schließen wir jetzt ab. Es ist eine sehr interessante Untersuchung, auch über Konventionen in der Kunstwelt. Und er behandelt auch Art in the State, also das Verhältnis zwischen States and the governmental apparatus und die Einflüsse auf Produktion und Distribution von Kunst. Er sagt noch abschließend, dass Aesthetization provides a rationale by which artworks justify their existence and distinctiveness and thus their claim to support. Art and artists can exist without such a rationale but have more trouble when others dispute their right to do so. Artworks, as they developed, therefore usually produce that rationale whose most specialized form is aesthetics and whose most specialized producers the philosopher. Ob das wirklich so, diese Form der Aufteilung wirklich noch zutrifft, das machen wir dann irgendwann. Bis bald. Ciao. Am Mikrofon verabschiedet sich Felicia Herrschaft.